Have you ever wondered what it takes to shatter the glass ceilings and lift others while you climb? Today, we are diving into the incredible journey with my friend, Erin Gallagher, the powerhouse behind Ella, an inclusive network that is breaking barriers and building bridges for women across the globe. And Erin is also the woman behind the Hype Woman movement. Yes, that Erin Gallagher. Imagine starting from the ground up, facing systemic barriers and trauma, yet rising to become a twice over CEO and a true inspiration for women worldwide. Her 20 plus year overnight success, the trials, the triumphs, we cover it all. But as we peel back the layers of Erin's journey, I want to invite you to reflect on your own path. And I want you to think about how you can both be a hype woman and do hype woman things. You are listening to the Glass Ceilings and Sticky Floor podcast, the podcast that will empower you to shatter limiting beliefs and toxic behaviors to uncover infinite possibilities so that you can live your best life. I'm Erica Rooney, and I'm on a mission to bring more women into positions of power and keep them there. I'm obsessed with all things growth and abundance, and I'm here to talk you through the tried and true secrets to get you to level up your career and your life. We talk about the hard stuff here: imposter syndrome, perfectionism, fear, and burnout. So pull up a seat, pop in an earbud, and let's dive in. Today, we are talking to the Erin Gallagher, CEO and founder of Ella, an inclusive network unlocking women's access to human, social, and financial capital. Y'all, this woman brings 20 years of experience leading global marketing, biz dev, branding, and communications. She has counseled at the White House and C-level leaders across the globe for some of the most well-known companies in the world, from airlines to the lovely Golden Arches. She is a sought-after intersectional feminist speaker and also the movement creator and podcast host of the movement Hype Women. Now, if y'all have seen the picture of Jamie Lee Curtis at the Golden Globes screaming her head off for Michelle Yeoh, look it up. But I'm not going to tell you any more about this woman's amazing story because she's here. She's live with us in the Zoom flesh, ready to chat today. Erin, welcome. So good to have you on the show.
Erica, that was a very good hype intro. I may just have you kind of on repeat for any place I have to go because I don't think I could have done it better myself. Thank you. I'm thrilled to be here. Very excited for the conversation we're going to have. Deeply grateful that you're creating a space to have these conversations and ready for wherever it's going to go.
Well, listen, I'm ready for you. Plug and play me, girl. Just tap me in. I'll come be your hype girl anywhere you need me to. But
I love it.
I want to dive right in. You started off as an administrative officer, and now you're a two-time CEO and founder. And Jamie Lee Curtis knows your name. So you got to dish the details on this amazing come-up story. Lay it on me.
It's a 20 plus year journey. So I love the people who say like, I'm an overnight, when they talk about themselves, like I'm an overnight, you know, decades of success or however they, I'm a 10 year overnight success. I'm a 20 plus year overnight success. And I absolutely started my career in a very different space than the one I'm in now. And yet mission driven. And so it's all come full circle. I thought I wanted to be a lawyer. And I went to Michigan and I took the LSAT and everything. And all of my friends that were a year older who went straight to law school, they said to me, you know what? I'm not sure we would have done this. So can we give unsolicited advice that we suggest you work at a law firm right out of school instead of going right to law school and really decide if this is the path that you want? So I started my career, my first job out of college at SLDN, Service Members Legal Defense Network, nonprofit legal aid watchdog. Entire mission was to lift the ban on gays in the military, which we ultimately did. And although it was an unbelievable experience and that I worked with some of the best people I've ever met in my life, I realized I didn't want to be a lawyer. It just wasn't going to be for me. And I think what I've always recognized is that I'm a person who asks a lot of questions. Why do we do it this way? Why have we always done it this way? Doesn't this not make any sense? And when you're inside of a system that isn't built by or for you, those questions come up all the time. We're told not to ask them because then we are labeled difficult, disruptive, confrontational, you know, fill in the blank. And so I just realized that it was going to be difficult for me to work in the legal system that is so entrenched in history and in physical books being kind of the guide. And so I moved on to communications and marketing and PR. And that's where I spent my next 15 years in agencies, leading global marketing, comms, and PR. And again, inside of all of those organizations, continually asking those questions and really starting to focus, of course, on those who are historically excluded, but most specifically on women, intersectionally. That was my passion and my desire to create a more equitable way forward and to really start to push back on what we had just accepted as what we were, the hand that we were dealt. So I left my agency career in 2019 and started my first company, Haverback, a diversity consultancy. And over the next 2.5 years, grew that company to be named one of Fast Company's World's Most Innovative in March of 2022. And then I turned 40 and I left because I had this phrase that kept coming to me that was, I will no longer abandon myself in service to others. I had spent my entire career and most of my, you know, personal relationships and experiences in service and really tying all of my value and worth to that service. And the requirement that I abandon myself in many of those spaces, it just caught up to me. And I got to a point where I thought, to what end am I going to continue to be in the background and to turn over what I feel is my calling to uplift others? So I left and then I started the company that I am in now. And we are coming up on 2 years, which is wild. And I say we because I'm a marketer, but it's just me. I'm a solopreneur, right? We always flex like we're bigger than we are, but it's just me. And so over the course of these almost 2 years, I have really been focused on building generational wealth for women and accelerating them into positions of power and influence. Those are the two missions that I have in the work that I do. And we do it through the Fairway, which is a series of dinners, inclusive, intersectional, really curated Fortune 500 C-suite, mid to senior level rising stars and founders and entrepreneurs, 20 women. And we've done 20 of those dinners over the course of 18 months, bootstrapped and self-funded. And we've also held two Hype Women events. The first was Galentine's Day sort of reunion in Chicago for 75 women. And I just returned from South By, where we hosted our first Hype Women soiree for 120 women. And so, you know, over those 22 experiences for 600 women, we have increased women's wealth by more than $8 million. They are doing business with each other the same way that men are doing business on the golf course. And that's really where my heart and soul of my work lies. And then the Hype Women movement, right? This, it came out of nowhere and yet it didn't. It started with that post that you mentioned on January 11th, 2023. And why I knew then it and why I continue to know now that it's not, it wasn't a moment, but it's a movement, is that just, you know, a few weeks ago, Jamie Lee Curtis was on her book tour. And every single show she was on, The View, The Today Show, and The Kelly Clarkson Show, pulled up that post that I wrote and wanted to talk to her about this. And like you said, she said my name in rooms I am not. She talked about this movement, and the purpose of it is to really encourage women to decondition from what we've been taught, that women are a competition, that they are threats to us, that they're a light on them casts a shadow on us. It's just, it's not true. And it's a distraction from the real work, which is dismantling a white supremacist patriarchy. So we are here to do that. And we launched, you know, thehypewomen.com, and we have brand partners where we're directing people to different women-owned businesses. I'm wearing my Hype Women necklace right now, created by Bliss Lau, a longtime friend and amazing jewelry designer, owner of Bliss Lau in New York City. And the Hype Women podcast, where we are really sort of interviewing women who are on the front lines, disrupting every single industry. And lastly, we launched the Hype Women Book Collective on International Women's Day down at South By, because if you have two panels and a soiree, why not throw in a book collective launch too? Because, you know, rest is for the weary. And so we launched, you know, 13 incredible authors on our book collective into the world. These are women who are, again, hyping women to who, remember who the fuck they are, which is my purpose in life.
I love it. I love all of that. Your mission aligns with my mission, which is bringing more women into positions of power and keeping them there. Mm-hmm. Because I think we've gotten to the state in the decade where we can get there, but then we are still just overburdened and over, you know, whelmed with all of the shoulds. Like you said, you know, I'm no longer going to abandon myself in service of others. And it's a piece of that. It is saying I'm not going to do all of this for everyone else if I'm not putting my own oxygen mask on first.
That's right.
And I love all of that. Now, one of the things that I think is so cool that it was Jamie Lee Curtis that was the catalyst for like the screaming was that she has grown up in an industry that, as we know, is dominated by old, pale, stale white males, the whole Me Too movement, everything. So how powerful did that feel for you to just have that one post go viral and create such a massive movement?
It was, it still is just a very sort of out of body experience. When you write, as I do, I write to process. That's how I process what's happening in the world. It's how I communicate. It's how I kind of move through the good and the bad. I share my writing because I want people to feel seen. And so that when it strikes a chord like that, as it did, and when it gets that virality, and you know, when Jamie's friend sent her my LinkedIn post, because Jamie's not on LinkedIn. Okay. She's on Instagram. She's got her like 6 million followers on Instagram, but her friend saw the post on LinkedIn and sent it to her and said, I think you will like this. This is so what you're about. And then she posted it to her followers. Then 15 global publications picked it up within, you know, 3 days. And as a former PR person, I guess you're always a PR person once you're a PR person, to know that you didn't pitch something and it got that kind of attention tells you that there's a cultural zeitgeist that is taking place. And it is society telling people what they want. And women were wanting this. Women don't want to talk shit about other women all the time. They don't want to have negative feelings about another woman's success. It's exhausting and it's really toxic. And so part of the message that I wrote in that was, it's not your fault. So I wanted to remove the shame and the blame from the feeling that you have, that every woman has. Any woman who says, I never think that, she's fucking lying, right? This is that we are conditioned to believe this, to feel this, and we are told that there's only one spot. And so if someone else has it, they took it from us. And so this is a very concerted effort by a patriarchal system that wasn't built by or for us to have us fight one another instead of fighting the system itself. So I think the message was, this is happening. It's not your fault. And it is your opportunity to do it differently. So the next time a woman's success is shared, whether she shares it or someone else does, when your first thought is, why her? Why not me? Did she really deserve that? Is she good enough? When you have that feeling, the next thing I want you to think is, of course I'm thinking that. I have been taught my whole life to think that, but I'm going to do something differently now. And instead of harboring that feeling and that jealousy and that envy, I'm going to hype her. And so I'm going to actually retrain my brain and go the other way. And when I was thinking to myself, should she have a podcast? I'm going to actually go and say, she has a podcast. Listen to it. I think it's amazing. It's going to change the way we feel about each other, ourselves, and we're going to get to a point where we don't have that initial reaction of anti-hype. And so Jamie, again, like she continues to say, I was just being me. And so I didn't mean to become a poster child for this or to become the unofficial ambassador. And I was like, you're an official ambassador. What are you talking about? That is who she is. It's who she's always been. It's who so many of us are. And we got to use that moment because it was such a public stage where it occurred. And then she got to use her platform to amplify it. And so I think what The gift of Jamie Lee Curtis, besides the just great, incredible, powerful, amazing human that she is that she also recognizes transfer of capital. She recognizes that she has social capital to give, and she has shared it a lot with me. And that is really powerful. And so we have this volleying back and forth of social capital that we are gifting to one another that is an unwritten contract. And I have a lot of women in my life with whom that is the same. And when you start to do that, we are creating a new ecosystem of commerce that is not that sort of, like you said, old, stale, pale, patriarchal, very one note, transfer of capital and based solely on money and hours. Like it's, we have opened the aperture on the definition of this, and it's about, can I share my human capital with you? What is my experience that I can gift you? Can I share my social capital? What's my platform or my privilege that I can, you know, pull you up on stage around? And what is my financial capital? What do I have to invest? If we can do that with one another, nothing can stop us.
You are the perfect person to share that social capital with because you are also so giving with your social capital and you are so giving of your time and just wherever you can uplift women and pour into them, you do so. So, two snaps for that. One thing I've got to touch on because I see you all over LinkedIn, I see you all over Instagram, and girl, I see that fiery red outfit with your new headshots. And I just think, damn, that is a woman that's got confidence and she is going to take on the world. But this is the Glass Ceilings and Sticky Floor podcast, right? We talk about the hard stuff here. As you worked through, you know, your entire come up story to this moment today, when you think about sticky floors, what resonates with you?
You know, that confidence was earned, hard earned, and it was a really complicated journey where I allowed for more than a decade other people to tell me my worth. And so my confidence came from whether or not they reflected back to me who I thought I was. It's a really dangerous place to be when you do that, especially in the hands of people that don't have your best interest in mind. When I have a, you know, I have broken free from a lot of trauma bonding over the past few years, trauma bonding that dates back, five, eight, 10 years. And once you realize that other people's opinions of you are simply that, they're not fact, they're opinions, and you reclaim your power and you are the decider of what you're worth, all of that means little to nothing. And for those that care about you, that love you, that see the best in you, they just are the cherry on top of that self-confidence that you continue to build. So that red Argent jacket, which, you know, I'm wearing Argent right now. I'm wearing my mustard Argent jacket, right? Sally Christensen, who's the founder of Argent, you know, I've said to her so many times, your jackets in particular, right? Your blazers, and of course they have pants and they have dresses and they have beautiful blouses and other things. But I was like, your blazers make me feel more powerful because I feel good in what I'm wearing. It has nothing to do with actually what I look like or what other people are telling me I look like. It's just how I feel. And I think the best clothing is the clothing you forget about when you're wearing it. You're not like, this is too tight, this is pulling, this is, it's just like, I just get to do my thing. And I've joked with Sally that people, when I'm wearing Argent blazers, people that don't know anything about me, so they're not LinkedIn followers. They're not even like coming to, you know, a talk or something, but they may just see me out in the world. They will say to me, "Are you famous?" And I'm like, "No, I'm not. I'm wearing Argent." Because when you're wearing an Argent jacket, you look famous. People react differently. I have done a study. I have walked through the airport dressed like a schlub, which I do more often than not. Ain't nobody paying attention. When I'm wearing my Argent jacket, people are like, do I need to know her? Is there something happening here that I'm not aware of? So what that comes from, again, is it comes with age and with me finding my own style and my style evolving because I am a 41, soon to be 42 in a week, Aries season, fire. I am a 41-year-old mother of a 7 and 5-year-old, two boys, whose body is very, very different than it was 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago. And I am so damn sick of hating my body and of putting clothing on that doesn't fit because it's not who I am anymore and using that to judge myself. And I just decided recently I was going to buy the clothes that fit and not give a shit about the number. And because the truth is, when you're wearing something that you feel good in, no one comes up to you and says, "Hey, you look amazing, but I just want to ask, what size is that?" Because when you tell me the size, my opinion's going to change on whether or not I think you look good. That doesn't happen. But every woman in a dressing room has that pang of shame when she has to go up a size, and no one fucking knows or cares what it is. So like you're seeing me in that jacket and in that blazer and in that suit and in that new set of professional photos by the amazing Lena Jackson, who is my forever photographer and our forever fairway photographer, who will make you look better than you're even capable of looking. That all comes from me just knowing who the fuck I am now and not caring about the opinions of people whose unprocessed hurt and trauma is deflected onto me.
All right, I got to dig into this one because out of all of the podcast episodes that I've held, when I talk to women and I ask them, what is the one thing you wish you knew now, right? Now that you have the confidence, now that you recognize your sticky floors, I would say the majority of them always say to know your worth and to not care about what other people think. And I do think that those are two of the stickiest floors, especially as women that we get pulled into with all of the comparisonitis and the bullshit that's out there. How do you stop that cycle of worrying about what other people are thinking about you and recognizing your worth?
It has been a lot of intentional work. I'm a huge proponent of therapy. I've been in therapy for 25 years. I see therapy as a tool and a resource that helps me to maintain and to resolve and to also plan and prepare. So I think therapy has gotten a lot of. It's come into the lexicon in a way that it didn't exist before. People were afraid to say they went to therapy. There was a lot of stigma around it. Now I think it's a much more conversationally acceptable thing to say. A lot of people say, "Well, you know, my therapist says," and no one bats an eye. So it's undergone a lot of acceptance in society. But I think, going to therapy because you're in trouble, that's where most people enter. And that's understandable. But it's something that actually I believe is important to just use as maintenance. So I've had to process a lot of shit. I've had to go talk to the younger version of myself that is still inside that is hurting. And I've had to fix shit for her before I could ever stand up and start to espouse something as an adult woman. And so it doesn't happen overnight, and it takes a lot of work. And so that is truly what I found, is that the people who do the work are the ones that actually are able to be in this space. Those that haven't been willing to like touch on what happened in their lives, whether it was, personal or professional, and those that are not interested in resolving inside of themselves what happened, they are the ones who are still hurt, and hurt people. And so I just have also recognized that not everyone gets access to me. That has helped me with those two pieces that you just labeled as sticky floors, which is knowing my worth. And what was the second thing that you said? Not
FOPO, fear of
giving it,
other
not,
people's
right, not
opinions.
giving a shit of what other people think. So those two things came from really getting to a place where I only give access to people that deserve it to me. A lot of people, because I write a lot on LinkedIn and I've got enough of a following that people I don't know at all come and feel that they need to give their opinion and feedback on what I've said. I used to read everything. And I used to take it in as information that needed to be addressed and considered. I don't do that anymore. I stay out of the comments for the most part. And I absolutely don't read. If you're going to send me a 7-paragraph DM, I'm not going to read it because you are likely telling me all the things you think are wrong with me, what how I'm not doing enough, how what I've said does X, Y, and Z. Listen, that ain't my thing to fix. That is clearly your shit to process, and you have decided that I am an outlet for you to resolve that with. I'm not a punching bag. I am not here to be a place for people to take out their unresolved shit on. And so that has shifted who has access to me in my personal and professional life. And it also, it's incredibly freeing, I think, to turn 40. There's something about that where you just get on this other side of realizing how much time you wasted on other people's opinions and more specifically on the wrong people's negative opinions. Those are the ones that stick with us. When the people who love us tell us good things, we're like, yeah, thanks. You're saying that because you care about me. When someone who doesn't know us says something mean, man, that gets way more airtime. That's rent-free in our head.
Isn't
And
that
I've just,
wild how
yeah.
like one person will tell us a very specific and factual thing about how great we are or what a good job we did, and we're like, oh, it's nothing. Oh, don't worry, I just did this. But yeah, one person who we don't know gives a negative piece of feedback and we treat that as fact.
We treat it as fact. So I've realized that I don't have to address it. Like that's the other thing is I thought I owed everyone a response. I don't owe anyone a response. I don't get paid to write on LinkedIn. Like, so I think it's incredible that people have so much opinion of what they think people that are have the guts to actually put thoughts out into the world. It's always the people who are in the stands that are talking shit to the people in the arena. It's almost never anyone that's also down there doing the work. And so I just move right along, staying right out of those comments.
Well, that is so powerful. And I love it because I talk about therapy on this podcast all the time. And I tell my therapist, listen, don't get ready, stay ready because you're coming with me wherever I go. Because it is so powerful to have that person there. I call it maintenance therapy, right? Like it is maintenance therapy. It keeps me in check, it empowers me to handle the tough situations. And it makes me feel like I don't, quote, need therapy because
Yes,
I'm always in therapy.
that's right.
But one thing that was so powerful for me that my therapist said was like, the second you start getting those comments, the haters in your comments, means you're doing something good.
That's
So that
right.
means keep going. So that's your symbol.
It's right, because you're pushing on something that is stirring up a emotion in people. And that is usually that disruptiveness is where change happens. So I have always considered myself a disruptor, and I think that that word gets a lot of flack because it can have a negative connotation. But to me, I'm not a disruptor for the sake of creating chaos. I'm a disruptor for the sake of saying what needs to be said in spaces where people haven't been safe to do so. And I have a lot of privilege as a straight, white, cisgendered woman. And because of that privilege, I feel deep responsibility to use whatever platform I have to say the things that so many others can't say.
100%, 100%. All right, Erin, how can we, as everyone listening to this podcast, males and females, further the Hype Woman movement?
What's so great about the Hype Women movement is it is a noun, but it's also a verb. And so hype women is a way of being. We are hype women. When we are women who hype one another, we are women who hype ourselves. But anyone can hype women. Anyone can take that action, regardless of your gender or your stance on anything in the world. And so we have incredible allies and men and non-binary folks who are a part of this movement because they recognize that they are often in rooms that we are not. And so the way that they can hype women is to say their names in rooms where they're not and to amplify their work. And, we've made it super easy. You don't have to, You know, I realized I was going to get incredibly overwhelmed when I said to people, when you are doing something amazing, tag me and I will repost it. Now, to the degree that I can. And I wanted to write something really thoughtful about every single post. And I was like, guess what's going to happen? I'm going to do nothing because I'm going to be so overwhelmed with like the work that it's going to take to be intentional about this. And so I decided, nope, I am literally reposting with the Hype Women hashtag. That's it. And it's just because all I'm trying to do is get eyes on it and to amplify it. And in the cases where maybe I have more of a perspective on something, I'll write more, but that's an easy way to do it. Repost people's content, share someone's success, make a big deal out of something that might seem small. Especially as a solopreneur, you know, there was this post by someone a while ago that, like, and I think it was, I can't remember who it was, but it was someone who has like three young kids and like something really cool happened to the world, but she was at home and like no one at home gave a shit. And like she was like popping a bottle of champagne. And I said, the like most common experience of my solo entrepreneurial journey is me celebrating big wins in my home where no one else cares that it's happening. But you do have to create, you have to carve out those spaces because otherwise, what is the point of this? If we're just going to work hard all the time, and when something good happens, we say to ourselves, well, that's what I was trying to do, but there's still more to be done. And we don't mark the moment. That's what Hype Women is about. It's about marking the moment for yourself and for other women when they have done something that deserves attention. And the more we do that for each other, you know, I'm obsessed with butterflies. I've got multiple butterfly tattoos. There's butterflies all around my office. I say that like individually we make a breeze, but collectively we can create a hurricane. And that's what butterflies do. It's called the butterfly effect, where an individual butterfly is just flapping its wings and nothing much is going on. But if a bunch of butterflies get around one another and do that, they can actually change weather patterns on the opposite side of the world. So that metaphor is really powerful when you think about the collective power of women, knowing that we are 51% of the population, we are half of the labor force, and we are 85% of consumer buying power. We could bring the world to a halt should we decide to do so. And if we stop fighting each other and we actually see the power in our collective action, nothing can get in our way.
So powerful, so powerful. I love that. Hype woman, do it and be it. Encompass all of it, right?
Yes.
All right, final question. If you could go back in time to the Erin who had to really fight for that confidence and had yet to step up to the stage that you're on today, what would that one piece of advice be that you would give her?
If they don't see your worth, run. Hands down. Hands down. I mean, it's really simple. If you have to keep reminding people what you're worth and telling them why you're valuable, they don't get it. Get out of there. It's a waste of your time and energy. And truthfully, what's likely happening is they know, but they're threatened by you. And sadly, some of the most toxic experiences in my career have been with straight white women. And especially those of a certain generation. And so if they don't value you, run.
Such good advice. Such good advice. Erin, where can people connect with you? How can they find you? How can they further this movement aside from just embodying what that is to be a hype woman?
Absolutely. You can find us on hypewomen.com. All of the information about the work that we're doing and our different sort of initiatives and my contact information is there, but you can obviously find me on LinkedIn. It's where I spend my most online time. Really, really love the power of that platform. We have 1 billion people on LinkedIn, and so it's the world's largest workforce. It's where we can have the most impact. And so I'm there. I'm also on Instagram. And you know, I think like sharing other women's work and tagging it with Hype Women. And you know, tagging me where you can, that puts it in my feed, and I may be missing it. And so when I'm able to see it and I'm able to amplify that, this is the transfer of social capital that we can continue to do to power each other's amazing work.
Well, you know what, Erin? My hope is that you do miss it because you have way too many notifications that you can't possibly keep up with
It's
them.
true. It's true. It's a really good point. And so like that's a good message to say, like, it ain't personal if I'm not responding. And so like And if it feels personal, you gotta go see a therapist. You gotta do the work
We
because I
got some
can't.
numbers for you. We got
We
some
got
really good
some
numbers.
numbers. I can't help you through that. I'm really sorry. I can't.
Oh, well, thank you for the conversation today. It was so insightful and just absolutely the best conversation of my day. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Erica. Same to you.
Hype woman, do it and be it. That is the one message I really want to leave you with today. But I also want to ask you to challenge yourself. How can you embody everything that it means to be a hype woman? How can you further the movement each and every day? Because it is these small moments where we can cheer and lift each other up and celebrate each other. That is what this movement is all about. Okay, friend, make sure that you rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. And go head over and follow Erin Gallagher's podcast as it truly helps it land in the hands of the woman who needs to hear it the most. And until next time, stop putting ceilings on what is possible and start smashing through them.